This is MSO News Sports. I'm Bill Newell, joined by Mike Schultz and Jared Hochman. And we're talking politics from the left and right. And we'll put myself, I'll be right in the middle here, okay, of the whole mix here. Mm-hmm. But Mike, tell us, give me a little something about Jared. Tell me about Jared, who's on the Peabody School Committee.
Yeah, basically, Jared's been on the Peabody School Committee for how many years now, Jared? Starting on his eighth year, he's Republican chair, I think, former chair, like I'm the former chair of the Democrats. And we've been looking for somebody to counter me, you know, to handle where I'm Democrat and we need a Republican. So I thought Jared would be a good person to do it. You know, he's a lawyer, et cetera, and he can handle a crazy Democrat.
Well, we'll see how you do, Jared, but... I guess, you know, first of all, let's just, maybe you want to follow up on what Mike just said.
Well, first of all, I'm going to try my best to counter Mike. That's a tall task that he's imposing upon me right out of the gate here. I appreciate both you, Bill, and Mike reaching out to me to participate in this forum and looking forward to having civil conversations about the politics that are going on locally, statewide, and nationally.
Yeah. Well, let's begin nationally. So we're going right off script right away here. Okay, so let's go nationally and talk about, Mike, the last time I saw you was actually Inauguration Day. So now let's skip forward to where we are at today and what we're seeing and what you're seeing so far in the early going with the Trump administration. That must sound good to you, right?
Well, you know, since you last saw me on Inauguration Day, I just got out of the hospital, you know. They released me and they said, you know, okay, you can go now. You seem somewhat saner, you know. But, no, I've been just, you know, bear in mind, I was a Bernie Sanders person, okay. I held my nose and voted for Hillary. Because there's no way I could see voting for Trump. And he's not only as bad as I thought he was, he's worse than I thought he was. And I'm so sick of people saying, oh, he's president, get over it. Yeah, just like they did when Obama was a president. And they wanted to kill him. They said, oh, you know, this one's bad and that one's terrible. It's the same thing coming back. I just tend to say, I'm going to be like Bernie in this. Just say, sit back and say, hey, he's going to do what he's going to do, and it's your job to fight it. If you can't win because, you know, it's overpowering, try and change it in 2 years, you know, so at least, you know, you got a balance, and, you know, so he doesn't have complete control. And, you know, there's enough moderates out there, but, you know, the problem is you got to get these people, you know, from the whole center of the country, which have been left. You know, they've really been walked away from by the Democrats. And basically, you got to get them back. And that's what it's got to do. So Bernie Sanders was on last night on the health care plan with Ted Cruz, you know. And basically, I thought he clocked Ted Cruz because Ted Cruz is not the brightest bulb in the pack, that's for sure. And for him to come out, you know, and start with the stuff, you know, one of them calls themselves a liar, and they both lie, like, unbelievable. So that's my opinion of them, you know. So ever since you saw me that day, I've been trying to come down bit by bit. And I do have friends that tell me, Mike, they elected him. Get over it. And I said, I'm over it. You know, I already realize what it is. So now I want to identify who it was that elected him.
You know, now I wish I'd brought like some cookies for everybody here. I think I would have maybe everyone would have felt good here. But, you know, you talk about that. I actually was in the car listening on one of the radio stations, and I heard part of that debate last night or that forum. And that was, you know, I don't disagree with what you're saying, but it was a good to have a good, thorough discussion on the issue from two different points of view and just hear that issue play out. But, Jared, what about you and what we've seen the first 2 weeks for out of Washington?
Well, firstly, I'd like to report to the listening audience that Mike has recovered from his broken ankles when he jumped off buildings on Inauguration Day. He looks healthy and fine. And you know, we have a president in office now, President Trump, who has campaigned on issues, was elected based upon how he campaigned, and is following through with those campaign promises. I don't think it's any surprise to anybody on the left or the right what President Trump is doing in the first few weeks of his administration. I don't think it's any surprise as to who he's nominated for cabinet positions. We still have a broken federal government. The people representing, elected to represent the citizens of the United States in Washington, D.C., for the most part, are high qualified, quality people. But there's a few that take up most of the airtime, and they're very partisan, and they create a dysfunction in D.C. that reverberates back to the states and back to local cities and towns and creates a lot of headlines and a lot of news shows, but really don't accomplish much for the people. I think President Trump nominated a highly qualified gentleman for the Supreme Court of the United States. I'm disappointed to hear that the Democrats plan to block that nomination. I don't think there's much disagreement among the legal community that this judge is highly qualified, who's written detailed and thorough and thoughtful opinions. And it just shows how partisan politics is in D.C. There may be some cabinet positions where Democrats have legitimate gripes as far as people who were nominated, and I respect that. And I'm happy that they're going through the process that the Constitution affords. But we also need to step back when there's a qualified person. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't go through the constitutional obligations that they have. Of course they should. But we don't need to bandstand and banter in front of microphones talking about how we're going to filibuster a nomination or go through these procedural oddities that exist in Congress that for someone who we can all – I think we can all agree is qualified. You know, there might be another opinion at the table. I don't know.
Well, that would be Mike Schultz. But, you know, Mike, let me just go back to one thing that Jared just mentioned is that you talk about the dysfunction in Washington or the partisanship and dysfunction. And, you know, you being a supporter of Bernie Sanders, I think didn't both Trump and Sanders tap into that dysfunction at a certain level and then – And not only tap into it, but got big time results out of that sentiment. And so, in a way, they both tapped into that same piece and really exposed how dysfunctional or how partisan it all was.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And you know, I agree with Jared on you know the what I'll call it party antics of going on with the rejecting people. But the thing of it is. The thing you have to look at is when they're doing this, it's basically because the party is telling them to do it. So they're saying they have to fight, okay? And I don't agree with all of that, basically, because when you say Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, you're absolutely right, because I'm not sure how much Donald Trump got elected on his views and things as much was anybody but Hillary. Okay, and if you don't know how many times I heard that, okay, and I'm one of the few that held my nose and voted from that. And people said, well, I'm going to give them a chance, but I'm not voting her. You know, so they picked Donald Trump over her, and there were plenty of Democrats that did it. Now, part of the thing with the bipartisanship, that's been gone since the Tea Party came around, okay? We, for years and years, were absolutely fine. You know, you would work things out in a bipartisan way. You know, you look at Kennedy and Hatch. All over the years, John Kerry and, who was the guy, Jesse Helms, you know, get together and stuff. When John Kerry got nominated for Secretary of State, it was 98 votes, okay, and he abstained. So, I mean, and this was something that this is a person that all these people are complaining about. And when I, in fact, think he's done a wonderful job. But the thing of it is some of the stuff that Trump is doing right now is, you know, first of all, the health care plan. You know, some of these things people are going to get out. And I have not found the Democrats explaining things like they often quote this, well, you can keep your plan, it'll be the same. The reason those people were taken off their plans is because those plans would not meet the standards that were required. So they said, no, we're not going to write that plan anymore. We're not going to take $100 a month from you for a plan that will give you nothing, but it's a plan. They used to do that. So now, you know, for $100 a month, you have to have a plan that will cover certain things. Okay, so a lot of these people took off and they didn't do it. So they wouldn't follow the rules. There's a lot of things about the health care plan that can be explained a lot better, but nobody bothers to do it. And that's one thing that really irks me. And, you know, the same thing with the Iran deal. You know, people have to look at that deal was going down, okay, when Kerry broke his leg, okay? It was going through, whether the United States got on it or not. So that would have meant all of Europe and most of NATO, et cetera, signed into this deal, okay? Kerry came in, extended the time that they had on the weapons, extended, you know, inspections, signed up a lot of different stuff, and forced a lot of stuff out of them because several times he'd got a much better deal out of it than they were going to go through, and we took it. Now, we've signed a treaty, and they have been following it. Now, they can talk about this, you know, this missile thing, but that was in the deal that they could do the missiles. And everybody talked about their money, about the money. That was their money that we took away from them in 1980. You know, it's just a lot of hogwash. And so let's say we pull out of this deal, okay, and we don't do the all the things with the sanctions, okay? Well, everybody else is not going to pay attention to that because they're on the other deal. Okay, so they'll sell them anything they want because that's what the deal says. So it's just, you know, the stupid stuff that he's doing without really working it out and talking it over. Even he's not even talking it over with Congress and the Senate. He's just doing his tweet thing, him and wacky Bannon, you know. So good luck to him and Kellyanne Conway. And I feel bad for this Scott, you know, Spicer, you know, I really feel bad for the guy. They told him to get himself a dark suit, you know, instead of the gray one with the stripes, you know, and a few other things like that. So, you know, it's something that we'll see what happens, you know, as it goes along.
All right, Jared, Mike just opened up like all kinds of doors and windows for you to jump through or whatever.
I warned you from the outset that I wasn't going to be able to keep up with Mike Schultz, and I think that's evident now. Mike has brought up, I think, at least two topics for future broadcasts, the Affordable Care Act being one, because I think that would take up an entire podcast or whatever we're calling this, and the Iran deal. You know, just briefly on those subjects, Congress dropped the ball completely, and President Obama showed his entire complete lack of leadership when he put forward the Affordable Care Act. There's no question that I shouldn't say there's no question. I, for one, don't have many reservations about wanting to help people with insurance and wanting to alleviate emergency rooms from being primary care facilities for people who are less fortunate and can't afford health insurance. But Congress, who regulates everything, regulates the color of yellow lines in the middle of the street, for some reason felt that they couldn't take on the insurance industry and regulate that industry to the point where they require insurance companies to take on consumers, take on individuals who have pre-existing conditions on policies, take cross state lines and allow for interstate competition for insurance companies to create larger pools to lower premiums. People should get health care, but to tax mortgages, which is one of the things that the Affordable Care Act does. I believe mortgages over $1 million pay a 3% tax to pay for Obamacare. How much longer are we going to continue with failed Democratic policies for the most impoverished people in our country? The people in urban areas overwhelmingly vote Democrat when it comes to state and national elections, and they continue to be poor, underprivileged, underprovided for, because we continue to treat them as if they're not capable of caring for themselves. We continue to give them handouts, and it just does not improve their quality of life. It doesn't improve their communities. It doesn't improve their standard of living. It's just going on for generation after generation. And we now have a president who's come in saying, enough. And whether you like Secretary DeVos or not, and she's clearly a controversial secretary, yeah. She is going to take on the public education community in this country, because people are tired of continuing to see inner city public schools with the worst teachers available and not teaching the poorest among us, who are going to continue to stay in that cycle. We need to do something different. And I'm not sure that charter schools is the answer, but it's very clear that inner city public schools in the poorest of neighborhoods are not educating kids to the point that we need them to be educated. We as a country spend more per pupil than any other country in the world, and we rank far below number one in the world for education. So she is a controversial cabinet member, not one I think I could have voted for if I was one of the 100 members of the Senate, but it's indicative of the type of person that voted for President Trump. It's indicative of the revolution that this country is going to go through in the next 2 years without firing a shot from a gun, because that's what people got tired of the left pushing too far. The left pushed too far under Obama, and I hope for some degree of moderation, because I don't want to see this pendulum going back and forth every 4 years or 8 years or however long it's going to be. We need to start legislating from moderate positions, and I hope that that's where we wind up going.
You know, Jared, we'll get Mike in here in a moment. I want to pick up on one thing you said, but two things. One was, you talk about, I think one of the most appealing things that Trump did in the election was appeal to the concerns of the urban voter, unlike any Republican had done since maybe Jack Kemp back in the 80s or something like that, 70s, 80s. Whether it works or not, whether, whatever he proposes, whether his policies match up with really what is needed. It's just the fact that he's addressing those issues, to me, was I think that was one of the turning points in the campaign.
Yeah, Bill, I couldn't agree with you more. I was a big fan of Jack Kemp, both as a football player and as an elected official. And I had the pleasure of meeting Jack when, I want to say it was 1992 or 3, and had a conversation with him. Impromptu. I didn't expect to meet him. Actually, he was at the Conservative Political Action Committee down in Washington, D.C., CPAC. And I was I don't remember if I was still in college or a young law student, but it was around that time in my life. And I had an opportunity to talk to him. And one of Jack's biggest or brightest ideas, I thought, was turning over public housing, which was in a crisis at that point in our country, turning over public housing to the occupants of the public housing and deeding the unit to them. So in other words, we were going through problems where people weren't caring for their property because they were living in public housing, and there was a lot of crime that people were turning their backs to and not reporting things. And quality of life for a lot of people in public housing was awful. And Jack Kemp came out with a policy or a platform, yeah, in which he said, you know what, people who own things, whether it be a car or a house or a basketball, whatever it is, are going to care for it more than if it's given to them and they have no incentive to care for it. And he wanted to just outright deed property that belonged to states and cities and towns to individuals who are residing there to improve their quality of life and give them a stake in our country. And I think you're right. Donald Trump is talking along those same themes. I think he's talking about giving people who haven't been stakeholders in a long, long time the opportunity to have some control over their lives a little.
Mike and Jared, I'll give you both a chance to close it out here. But, Jared, I want to pick up on one last thing, and I'm going to hand it to Mike to react to this. But you mentioned the Congress regulating even the color of the yellow lines. However, in Peabody, you don't have yellow lines down your main streets. You have red, white, and blue lines down the street. So you guys are both from Peabody. So, Mike, explain that one to me.
That's very easy. That happened in the bicentennial and followed pretty much by the couple of other things we had, and it runs the parade route only. And the yellow lines, it's funny you talk about those because that's a particular thing with me. Every time we paint a yellow line in the city, they paint it with a paint that only lasts a year, okay? And they tell you that's because, oh, they can't have lead in it. So you can't have lead on an asphalt road. Because, you know, somebody might be chewing up the asphalt and they'll get poisoned with it.
Mike, we found common ground.
Oh, there, we got
frustrated by the painting every year, too.
We do have it. It's ridiculous. And they do make paint, you know, that will last more than a year. Okay, so I've looked into this and I've complained to the mayor about it, et cetera. But, you know, this is the way that these things work. But
I've lowered this.
You know, yeah. And definitely we will be, you know, happy to talk over charter schools. And my son, he's a professor, not a teacher. He was with the Boston school system as a new teacher developer, but he's got his doctorate and it's in language, literature, and culture, one of the toughest documents. And he was solidly against, you know, charter schools, because you're privatizing education. You know, when you privatize education, you get what corporate wants to teach. And what corporate wants to teach is what corporate wants to do to this country. And that's what they're doing right now. So, you know, you will find that if you try and privatize in like Peabody or, well, you did in Massachusetts, you know, with the full support of Charlie Baker going hog wild on it, you know, and all the other, you know, as Curly used to call them, the goo-goos, all the goo-goos coming out and saying, oh, we got to have this because it's for the poor kids in, you know, in Boston and stuff like that. You should see what they did with the Orchard Gardens, a school in Roxbury that they brought my son in to take over with the group. And they had taken him in, and they had 2 years been in there when they brought in my son and this crew. They turned the school totally around, and then they brought in their sixth principal in 2 years, in 3 years. Sixth principal in 3 years. And the sixth principal came in, not even talking to anybody, said, okay, the numbers came out, and you're below the numbers, so we're firing 75% of the people. So they came to my son, well, we're not going to fire you. We're going to keep you here. And he said, no, you're not. You're going to bring me in here with a bunch of Teach of America types next year, and because it's going to save you money and stuff like that, and that's what you're going to do? He said, no. Well, you know, all of a sudden you get calls from all over the place in Boston, and the next thing you know, administration call him and make a new teacher developer. But then he gave up that lucrative job, and it was a well-paying, great job to become a professor. Okay, because he's really into education and teaching, and he's very well regarded, et cetera. And now he's ended up in Salem, Oregon. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff we could probably agree on, because I'm a moderate. And, you know, I'm going to tell you, a lot of this stuff was anti-Hillary, okay? And, you know, just like there'd be a lot of anti-Elizabeth Warren, who I absolutely love. Okay, so you can take it from there. I think the world of her. But
we can agree.
Jared, you're close it out for
us.
Yeah,
no, I mean, and I'm not going to, Mike, again, outpaces me. It's incredible the shape that he's in and how he's able to, but we could agree that the Republicans could not have run, excuse me, Donald Trump could not have run a worse campaign. He stepped in it three times a day and published it himself, and still beat Hillary Clinton in the electoral vote. And I'm sure we'll talk about constitutional protections that are afforded for the electoral vote as opposed to the popular vote.
They all want to change it when it doesn't go their way.
In the fifth or sixth iteration of this show. All right. In any event, it was great meeting you guys today and talking to you.
All right. There you go. Jared Hochman from PBD School Committee and Mike Schultz, former Democratic, three-time Democratic city chair in the city of PBD. Right and left. And I'm Bill Newell, and this is MSO News Sports.